What do cucumbers, green beans, green tomatoes, broccoli, sauerkraut, beer, cider, wine, mead, sourdough, yogurt, buttermilk, carrots, kombucha, and kimchi have in common? Stephen Dahlberg from White Earth Tribal and Community College joins us to talk about local food this morning. Steve, what's the answer?
They're all about fermentation. And they all taste good.
Yeah. You are giving a workshop on fermentation at the Happy Dancing Turtle Back to Basics on February 11th, which, when I looked yesterday, is full. What is interesting to you about fermentation?
Well, how about if I tell you why I got started in it? That's probably a big part of the story. About 11, 12 years ago, a group of us here on White Earth did a local food challenge where we ate only food produced within 250 miles of our home for a year. And in the process of planning for that, one of the things I had to figure out was how to eat living food. Well, as you all know, the growing season in our part of the world is a lot shorter than the eating season. And so I needed to have living foods and all the enzymes and the heat-sensitive vitamins like vitamin C and things like that during that non-growing portion of the eating season. And I came down to the option of either making sprouts or starting to fool around with fermentation. And I'm not really a big fan of sprouts, and so I chose the fermentation route. And so I just started fooling around with it, and a couple of things happened. First, I really liked it. I really liked the things that I was making. But the other thing is as I was doing my research, I was starting to find more and more of the benefits of eating fermented foods, and you know, things just continue to come out about health benefits of fermentation. So that's pretty much where it came from.
Tell us about some of those benefits.
Well, for example, I was just at a conference, a sustainable ag conference, this past weekend, and one of the presenters was talking about some of the health problems associated with the glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup, and one of the presenter didn't talk about it, but one of the people in the audience talked about that sauerkraut juice has been used as a way to remove glyphosate from your body because it bioaccumulates. And so that's one example. There's so many different physical things that go on in our body that are not actually governed by our body, but they're controlled by the microbes in our digestive system, which they call the microbiome, is the name that people are starting to use for it. The mood, for example, if you have a good mood or depression, that's basically controlled by how healthy your microbiome is in your gut. And they also do a lot of the digesting for you, so they make more nutrients available. And there's just many other examples. Those are a few that I can think of right off the top of my head.
What was the first thing that you ever tried to ferment?
I started out making wine because I'm also a fruit grower. And so I had to figure out something to do with all the fruit that I would have on a really bumper year. And you can only eat so much jelly. And so anyhow, I started exploring cider making and wine making as a use for that fruit. So that's really where it started. And then probably sourdough bread was the next thing that I started on. And then I really got into the vegetable ferments and some of the soft drinks and all of those other things. So it's just been kind of a building. I mean, you'd start one thing and you get to where it's a part of a routine in your life and then pick up the next one and so on and so forth.
Tell us about some of your favorites. What are some of the things that you really like to ferment?
Well, hard cider is one of my favorites. I like beer as well, but beer is a little bit challenging for me. I'm a little bit of a throw things together and that's good enough kind of a cook. And I found that beer doesn't like that. It's very particular, and so I end up with a lot of sour batches and not all that many that I'm really happy with. So anyhow, that's a bit of a frustration, but on a daily basis, this is one of my favorite things. It's got to be bread and yogurt and buttermilk. I eat those things every day, usually multiple times a day. So that's really where it is.
I'm kind of interested in cider. It's a historical thing. People used to drink a lot of hard cider. What's that process like to make cider?
Well, it's a little bit variable depending on exactly what you have. I have a bunch of cider varieties growing at my dad's place east of Detroit Lakes, but they're not producing apples yet. And so I've been just using whatever apples I find in abundance. I've got a crabapple tree in the yard of the house I'm living in now, and I've used some Harrelson apples. I've had lots of them in the past, and they're not particularly sweet. If you have dessert-quality apples, it's basically mixing up a bunch of different apple juices that you, you crush the apples and press the juice out, and then you mix a combination of sweet with some sour apples, and you want to get some bitter also. And so people have used different things, from aronia juice to pasture apples that don't have particularly good eating qualities. And you put that combination together. It's very similar to the winemakers. They have to have the tannins in the grapes, but only specific grapes are used for wine, because you have to have a combination of acid and sweet and tannin to really get a good ferment and a good flavor after it's aged. So anyhow, I end up with just sometimes single variety apple juice, because that's all I happen to have. And so I use honey to get some more sugar in there to help with the fermentation, and I'll make a really strong batch of tea to mix in with it too, to get the tannins in. And then, so you put all of that together and put it into a carboy or a gallon apple cider jug or whatever you have, and let it ferment for a few days without anything on top, except for I'll maybe put a little bit of aluminum foil to keep dust or things like that from falling in, because it'll really foam a lot, and you want to get that foam out of there. And once that part is done, then you put a vapor lock on it, and you just kind of let it sit for 3-4 months, and then rack it off, siphon off the cider from the top, and try to leave the dredges of dead yeast and various other things down at the bottom, and let it sit for another 3 months or so, and then it's ready to bottle.
We are talking with Stephen Dahlberg. He's one of the presenters at the Back to Basics workshop a week from this Saturday, and we're talking about fermentation. Steve, is there anything that you have wanted to try to ferment that you haven't fermented yet?
No, nothing that I can think of. I mean, I've got a pretty extensive list. I could tell you what I've got in the house right now, if that would be of interest.
Definitely.
Okay, so I have got fermented salsa, dilly beans, cucumber pickles, sauerkraut, kimchi. I've got two different varieties of buttermilk in the fridge. Right now I've got a whole wheat loaf of sourdough bread, but I also do different rye recipes and a pure white, and then also a recipe where I put some seaweed in, some dove flakes, or there's another one, I can't remember what it's called. It is a part of the recipe. I've got an elderflower soft drink, my kombucha, the ginger beer, which is one of my not-so-great batches. Hard cider is brewing. I've got blackcurrant mead and raspberry mead brewing also. So that'll be several months before any of those last three things are going to be ready to bottle up, and then it'll be a year before I'll be drinking them, but all the other things are there and ready to go.
Is there anything you've ever made that's gone horribly wrong? I mean, you just mentioned the, the ginger beer that's maybe not your best, but do you have any memories of things that didn't go so well?
Well, I've had two jars of something. I can't remember specifically what they were, that they went bad. I mean, they just smelled horrible when I opened them up. And that's out of hundreds and over the course of, like I said, 10, 11 years. So I just dumped those in the compost. The one thing that I made that I really didn't like all that much, but I soldiered through and ate it anyhow, was I fermented some plums, some wild plums that I gathered. Just, it was just an experiment, really, to see what, how it worked out. And it was not particularly awesome. So that was one I definitely did never do again.
Fermented food, as you've said, is living food. What does heating and cooking do to them? Does it kill it, and does it make it less healthy?
Yeah. So one of the things that I've never understood, there's a lot of people that I have run into over the years who make sauerkraut, and then they can it. You know, they hot water bath can it. And that's really defeating most of the purposes because, first of all, there's a lot of enzymes that you need to be eat on a regular basis to stay healthy, and those are all killed. There's the heat-sensitive vitamins that I talked about earlier, like vitamin C, that are destroyed by heating. But the really big thing is then you don't have any contribution to that microbiome. So whenever you eat anything fermented, all those microbes that did the work for you are become part of that community of microorganisms in your digestive system. And that's why, for example, people will tell you to eat yogurt after you finish a course of antibiotics for something to try to restore that microbiome. And of course, the more diverse type of fermented foods you eat, the quicker and the better you're going to restore that. Because that microbiome, a healthy microbiome is a, they've determined is something on the order of 1,000 different microorganisms. There's 1,000 different species living inside your digestive system, and they don't all get killed by antibiotics or any of the other kinds of toxins that your body is exposed to during the course of living on this earth, but they can get knocked back really substantially, and the sooner you restore that again, the better off you're going to be. So all of those things are lost by, say, canning some vegetable ferment, and you don't need to. The whole reason why people did fermenting is that the acids that are produced by that process preserve the food, so you don't need to refrigerate it. I mean, I've had jars of pickles sit on the floor in my basement for years because I kind of over-prepared for that local food challenge, and it literally took me 4 years to eat all of the ferments that I made to get ready for that year. And they were all sitting on room temperature for that time, and they were fine.
You know, I think one of the things about fermentation to me is that it seems almost magical that, you know, you put some salt on some cucumbers and, you know, you might add some horseradish or some, you know, some leaves of horseradish or some garlic to that, and you submerge it in brine, and magically the enzymes and the colonies, whatever the bacteria is or yeasts or whatever, they kind of just come from the food and come from the air. And it's like the earth provides for you when you're fermenting things, and it just seems very, very cool.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. That's a lot of it for me is, you know, the fun of it is that very thing. In fact, I have to admit I don't get out much, but it's just fun, like watching the bubbling in the fermentation vessel when you're making wine or cider or beer. It's just something cool about it. It's very entertaining to me.
Now, your workshop is full, and when we first talked about getting together today on the radio, that wasn't the case, but now your workshop is filled up. So do you have any resources? Can you recommend any resources for people who'd like to learn more about fermentation?
Yes. A good place to start is the Weston A. Price Foundation. Sally Fallon has been kind of the spokesperson for that organization for a long time, and they are all about good nutrition, and fermentation is a part of what they do. But if you go to their website, chances are you can find things. There is, and I'm not going to be able to remember the name of it, I don't think. There's an organization that sells all kind of cultures, buttermilk cultures, yogurt cultures, sourdough cultures, which, by the way, you don't need to get a sourdough culture. Your own will start up spontaneously, just like you were talking about. But, yeah, if I can pull that name out of my brain, that they do an email send-off of recipes and things like that. There's a few books out there. Sally Fallon has written a few books. The one that I have is Nourishing Traditions, and there's some fermentation recipes in there. There's another guy named Sandor Katz, K-A-T-Z. He's written a couple of books about fermentation. Wild Fermentation is the one to choose because that's the recipe book. The other one is more of a theory, you know, here's all the science behind all of this kind of a book. So those are the main, like, books and that I can think of right off the top of my head. I should have had the pile in front of me.
That's a pretty good list.
As far as that, the one source that I'm trying to think of, I think if you just Googled up cultures, buttermilk cultures, yogurt cultures, sourdough cultures, they would probably come up fairly quickly. But I just can't remember right offhand.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for talking with us, and good luck with the workshop.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me on.